Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson, here on the magnificent Monday edition of The Yard. One of the hottest days of the year. Hope you guys are staying hydrated and hope that your AC is working. I can't even begin to imagine. And we got about a month or so of this. The good thing is when we get towards the end of September, we start getting a break with some of this humidity. So maybe the heat index will come down. But like many of you, I am ready for football weather. I am ready for football season. But I'm very much anticipating cooler weather. Matter of fact, I bought some clothes today to try to usher that in. You know, it feels like, you know, we get our first couple of days of spring. You put on those shorts thinking you can manifest warmer weather. I also want to point out, too, to all of you that complained so much during the winter months that you said you would never complain when it's hot again. Well, I don't want to read any more of your Facebook posts about it being hot. So we're all hot. And if I joked with Danny P. Smith the other day. I said, Danny, I figured out why old men, when we were just young bucks, I have now figured it out since I am of advanced age in my 50s, why old men care so much about the weather. It's because we don't tolerate it as well. That's true. But be that as it may, one day closer to college football season. We had our first preseason scrimmage on Sunday. I'll share with you some things that Jeff Lebby had to say about that. And got a cool top 10 list for you. We'll talk a little bit about the AP top 25 poll, even though we're not included in that. I honestly think it's a good thing. Obviously, you think, man, we would get a vote. But no, we didn't. And we probably don't deserve one, right? We're not one of the top 25 teams in the country. But sometimes you get an activist voter out there, and they'll throw a vote at you. And, of course, the briefs are in for the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals as it relates to the court case that ultimately will decide Jerron Manning and Malik Sela's eligibility for the 2026 season. So a power pack show for you guys, and let's get it underway. Let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company, longtime sponsors of this show, and we love Bulldog Burger Company. Yeah, there are some places you just kind of like. We love Bulldog Burger Company, and for good reason, right? Because you get more than you pay for, right? You get quality service, really exemplary service. And you know what? That should be a staple at every restaurant, but it's not. You know it's not, but when you go there, they do such a good job when you put your feet under their table, just kind of taking care of everything. And I love that about them. There's also the great hamburgers to choose from. Find your own favorites on the menu. Of course, I'm still on this smash burger kick. And I guess we'll have Bulldog Burger Company either tonight or tomorrow. I think that's the plan anyway. I look forward to that. I do like that Biscoff cheesecake too. When they did their social media push for the new menu items, they asked all the employees what was their favorite new menu item. And my son, Ian, said the Biscoff cheesecake. And I thought, well, okay, maybe he's just saying that because he's a cheesecake guy. But he is correct. It is an excellent dessert. And, of course, I'm a big proponent of the spring rolls because they make you and everybody around you better looking. And some of you need them. I can tell you're slacking. But if you're on top of your beauty care regimen, try those brand new pulled pork nachos. It's outstanding. I don't know what kind of sauce they're using, but it's like the perfect blend of smoky and sweet. It's just absolutely perfect. I love it so much. And then get that chocolate shake to go. You can ride that ride home with a smile. Again, three great locations to serve you. University Drive in Star Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Bulldog Burger Company. The place where people go to meet, M-E-A-T. Okay, scrimmage was closed to the media, and we do our best to kind of respect what everybody wants, try to play ball with everybody. And a couple things right out of the gate. Sam Sklar from the Ledger asked for a follow-up. I asked here a week or so ago, is there anybody you know, that you're worried about going into camp, and there were a couple things we're watching. One of those we know is DJ Reed, who is not expected to be out for an elongated period of time. They're just being careful with him in camp. We find out that Colin Coates, he's a depth piece on the defensive line, didn't get to play last year also because he had a season-ending injury. And it's so ironic. I wrote about this morning. So back in the spring of 25, Kai McClendon, who played extensively for us as a true freshman at defensive tackle out of Gulfport, and he was the guy, too, that didn't even play defensive tackle to his senior year. So he kind of bloomed late. He comes in, plays a lot of snaps for us, and much of that out of a positional need. We had to play him really before he was ready, but he gave us a great effort. Well, we get into spring, and Kai tears the ACL, out for the year. Well, we need another guy. We need numbers. So we go into the spring portal, back when there was such a thing. 25 was the last year of the spring portal, at least until some activist judge changes what we do with college sports. But so we had Colin Coates out of Charlotte. And he had played as a true freshman and as a sophomore, largely as a reserve. It's interesting, too, you go back and look at year one with him. He had played four games, and then they start him in the season finale of a losing season. Like, they burned his redshirt year really for nothing. And now, you know, you can kind of get that back. You can get a medical hardship waiver after back-to-back years. But as we get into fall camp last year, Colin gets injured too. And he works his way back, misses the year, has a good spring. We're expecting him to be in the rotation. We're not expecting him to start, but we do expect that he's the guy that could help us a little bit. And now he's got a torn muscle. We don't know the location of the muscle, but he is out for the year. And as Jeff Labby says, you just hate it so bad for the young man. But he's coming here, and he's given you two quality summers and done his best to help move this program forward. And he hadn't had the benefit of playing in a single SEC football game. Not a single snap in a maroon and white uniform outside of the spring game earlier this year. You hate that. You do. Kind of getting to some other things that Leb talked about. We talked about, you know, the energy. And there's something about going into the stadium that kind of unlocks that. That's not to say that we're dogging it on a practice field, but when you go into the stadium, there's just a different elevation of emotion, right? And so they go in there, and that's where you play the games, right? It's one thing, you know, you get a million practices. You get a million off-season conditioning workouts on those practice fields. So it's like your mind is like, okay, well, this is the training facility. But you go into the stadium, that is the game-playing facility. So as a result, there is a little more pizzazz, maybe. Leb says, I did. And there was a ton of back and forth. Defensively, we started the scrimmage really well, a couple three and outs. I liked the way the offense was able to bounce back, get their cleats in the ground, and execute the calls. Great competition. We have a ton of work to do. Number one, we're healthy coming off the field, which is huge. Number two, the energy and physicality was really good. End of quote. That's a great quote. And again, I think the underlying thing there is, yes, we had great tempo. And I don't mean just snapping the football, but everybody played with urgency. And then you get out of there healthy. And that's the one of the most important things every time. And granted, when you play football, you're going to have some injuries. But this time of year, you got to be smart with all that stuff and do your best to mitigate risk as often as you can. I asked him specifically, you know, and here was the question, really. It didn't make transcript that way, but here was the question. We had a lot of red zone issues last year. And matter of fact, you go back and watch the Mayo Bowl, if you could stomach it, and we actually, you know, played really well at times. But, man, we had three scoring drives in the first half that all ended with field goals. And you know, we had so many opportunities. We had another fourth down that we went for on fourth and one and didn't get. We couldn't get any push in the middle. But we had multiple opportunities in that game to take control early. And that was one of the things I've recently watched that game. Matter of fact, earlier today I watched State and Southern Miss again, just kind of, again, familiarizing yourself with personnel. And so I thought, hey, let me ask this question kind of about red zone efficiency, but also, too, kind of a two-parter to the question, is you don't run as much tempo in the red zone. And you're facing a new defense. When you got ones versus ones, you're facing, you know, that 3-3-5. And so I was just kind of curious, how do things change? You know, we have had troubles, and two, now you're seeing a different defensive scheme. What's it been like down in the red zone? Leb says there's been a ton of back and forth. When we started our red zone period, defense did a great job getting off the field. Forced a field goal, we missed the field goal. We got a red zone knockout play down there, ones and twos. Offense continued to play and ended up winning that period 21-17. And that's what you want. You want it to be really close, back and forth, really competitive at the end. End of quote. And that's one of those things that I think is incredibly important, because we have to be better at red zone offensive efficiency and defensive efficiency. And there were some times last year, like you go back to that Arizona State game, that great goal line stand that forced Arizona State to kick a field goal ultimately gave us the opportunity to win the game. And we did, as Coach talks about complimentary football. And that's how it worked out. Now, one of the things that I have learned is that we're probably maybe 6 or 7 receivers deep in that room with guys that have the ability to help us this year. Now, you know, some of those guys, obviously, because they're returning. You feel like Aiden Williams, Anthony Evans, Sanfrisco McGee, you feel like those guys are going to be able to help you. But you went out and added some more receivers in the portal. Zion Reagans is a guy that's completely different than anybody else you have. He's a lot like Brennan Thompson. You need him to go make some plays for you. Then you keep hearing the players mention G-Baby, who is Grayson Harris, a young man that was here last year. And so you can kind of begin to see that while we don't have Brennan Thompson, we can kind of make up that production by committee. And so I'm just kind of curious, you know, hey, coaches, we got toward the end of the year last year, you know, the rotation kind of centered around 3 to 4 guys. Aiden Williams got healthy. Frisco kind of had the light turn on. But it was, by and large, it was Brennan and Anthony and then whoever else, right? We've got a lot more options this go around. So I asked Coach about that. You know, how do you anticipate the rotation going this year? Leb says, as we get going, we're going to find out who is going to make the play. You have the opportunity to make it, but who's going to make it? We're doing that as we evaluate these guys through fall camp. It's about guys doing it on Saturday afternoons. Until some of these live bullets start, I'll wait to say how many we're going to play. End of quote. Now, that's a little coach speaking. But based on sourced information and based on personal evaluation, I think this wide receiver room is in the best shape it's been in the Jeff Levy era. And I really don't think it's close. That's my feeling. But Coach makes a good point, too. We've been through these things before. You know, like year one with Javonte Payton, remember him? Javonte comes in here and was the hero in practice and then didn't hardly do anything. Well, then Javonte takes off in year two. Had some injuries, obviously, but the point I'm trying to make is we have a lot of guys that are doing it in practice. Can they do it when the band is playing and the stands are full, right? That's one of the big questions, and I think Levy has the same question. But I think there is enough evidence so far that we feel like that we're in a really good spot when it comes to receivers. And that's one of the things, too, as we begin to think about the last couple of years, is you've had some guys, you know, obviously Mario Craver came in as a true freshman, did some good things, transferred. Kevin Coleman came in as a transfer, did some great things, was all SEC, transferred. But now you're able to get some player retention. And I think that's one of the things, too, is what excites me about Anthony Evans, is last year was the most extensive action that he has seen as a college receiver. He was primarily a punt return guy and kind of a mop-up guy at the University of Georgia. And then last year he comes out here and goes over the 800-yard mark. And he's got his eye, obviously, on Brennan's school record. I love that ambition. But it's one of those things you begin to look around too, and In order for Ant to have the year that he projects to have, you're going to have some other guys step up and make plays so we can get Ant in some one-on-one situations. You know, I think we would all agree that that's advantageous. I didn't mention Marquise Johnson earlier, too. He is a guy, too, that was kind of a high-profile guy that kind of got the class going, but we haven't really heard a lot about him. But when you begin to get a little deeper into this wide receiver room, there are some young guys that I think are going to be able to help us. And Grayson Harris. Football is back, and thank goodness for that. My friends over at Prize Picks bringing out their best offer to date. New users who sign up will get $150 in lineups. That's if you win your first $5 lineup. It's pretty simple. If you win your first $5 lineup, you get $150 in lineups. And now, Prize Picks is available nationwide. So what you waiting for? Lock in for kickoff because everyone and everything is on Prize Picks. So what are you guys excited about this football season? I think the Steelers are going to be better than many people expect. I'm all over that aspect of it. I think that Steelers defense is going to kind of return to form. I think Pittsburgh's going to make a run at this thing in the AFC North. Maybe you see things a little bit differently, but you need to get in the game and get some skin in the game with me on Prize Picks. Now, Prize Picks is going crazy with the deals to start football season. They're just as excited as you and I are. They're giving you this new promo every day during a very stacked September. Make sure to sign up now for guaranteed picks every Sunday, along with profit boosts and daily discounts throughout the entire month. Plus, the app is very simple to use, and it's very user-friendly. You just pick 2 to 6 players and then pick more or less on their projected stats like pass yards, rush yards, fantasy score. It's the best way to get more locked in on game day. You can make all the picks you want across any sport, all in the very same app. Download the app today and use code BONEYARD to get $150 instantly in lineups if you win your first $5 lineup. Prize Picks. Run your game. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Hey, if you could wake up tomorrow and just be better at one thing, what would it be? You know, maybe it's less doom scrolling. Maybe it's more time with your family. Maybe it's making more time for the things that bring enjoyment. You know, I'm a bit of a workaholic, to be quite honest with you. You know, I could schedule some time to do some things away from the office. You know, and I think all of that helps me. I enjoy my work, but sometimes it's just simply good to get away. You know, better is a feeling, and it's really defined by you. And for BetterHelp, it's a BetterHelp therapist who really gets you. It's a focus on global emotional well-being with thousands of therapists and millions of members in over 100 countries. Well, it's progress. You know, and maybe it's getting better at making more time for yourself to do the things that you love. Sign up today and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's Better, H-E-L-P.com. Harris is one of those guys. And, you know, maybe Bull Mitchell can kind of pull forward too. You know, he was in a yellow jersey the other day. But, again, I think when you look at this thing, you kind of begin to recognize that we've got more weapons to work with at that wide receiver position. And that should give us an opportunity to be a lot more versatile when it comes to what we run. And all of a sudden, you know, we talk, one of the biggest things about offensive football is you want to put players in conflict. Like that's what the RPO does to linebackers, right? I'll give you a great example. When we ran the air raid, there was a lot of drop eight coverage. Well, one of the things that is a byproduct of running a drop eight is you don't have a lot of explosive running plays. You get some explosives, but you don't see that 75-yard run. You don't see it because you got a lot less people at the line of scrimmage and in the box. People are retreating on the snap to kind of keep the pass in front of them. In this particular offense, there's a lot more balance. And because of the fact that you're putting linebackers in conflict with the RPO, you have to pull the safeties up a little bit too to help fit the run game. With all the motion and all the action that we run, when you have to pull the safety up, that's going to give us an opportunity to have somebody paired up in man coverage outside the numbers. A lot of people are just going to run a one high safety look against us just so they have somebody to defend the deep third. And so because of the fact that you have some balance in the Jeff Levy era, you're seeing more explosive run plays because people have to respect the throw game, as Jeff Levy says. And you're seeing more explosive pass plays because you can't play two high safeties. You can't do drop eight because you have to respect the run. And that's one of the things about this particular scheme. While we have some air raid elements involved in it, we want to run the football. And the better we run the football, the better we're going to throw and catch the football, because we're going to get better matchups. We're going to get better looks from a defense because the linebackers have to respect the RPO game, so they can't get quite as much downhill. And the safeties are going to have to pull up a little bit to provide some assistance. And so you get better matchups outside the numbers. And that's the thing about this thing, is you kind of take the betterment of the air raid and the concepts associated with that, but you kind of modernize. And that was one of the things towards the end. You know, like when you go back and look at that last year with Leach in 2022, I can't remember, but I think we were like 6-2 in games. We rushed for 100 yards or more. And so we were kind of trending in that direction. Matter of fact, we were chasing a tight end. We wanted a guy out there that can kind of be that attached tight end and kind of be that third tackle to kind of give us a little more flex in the run game. And so I shared that because I think what you guys have gotten is kind of what you wanted offensively, but maybe you didn't realize it. You wanted the air raid, but you wanted a modernized version that also incorporated a lot more of the power run game. Well, that's pretty much what you have now. So in that respect, I feel like, hey, we're on target with that. You remember how much you enjoyed the Zach Arnett defense when he was the defensive coordinator under Leach. And so I share that with no disrespect intended to anybody that was here in years previously. But I believe in many respects, this is kind of like what we wanted. It's taken us 3 years to get it, or I guess really technically four to get it, because we did not like the Kevin Barbe offense. And again, you go back, it's we fumbled it. We fumbled it. You know, you brought back so many veterans on offense, what you decided to change the system. You know, we'd have been better off going and just hiring some air raid guy from Iowa Wesleyan or something if we needed to. I mean, we needed to run the air raid concepts with that particular brand of players. It's taken us a long way around to get there. But I believe now, offensively and defensively, we kind of have what we want. And I hope that we can get what we want to get. Lev was also asked about the offensive line. Lev says they had some really good moments, and they had some moments that weren't. We'll watch it tonight and have a better idea where we ended up. There was really good strain. There was good physicality. Got to create more consistency. Where we are today compared to a year ago today, it's not close. We've got to get better, but our guys are playing with a ton of urgency. I like where that group is. Just want more, end of quote. I think that's always the case. You always want a little bit more from your offensive line. But what I like about this is, yes, there has been progress over last year. What's interesting, too, like when I go back and watch these games, because, you know, you already know the results, right? There were times last year the offensive line played really well. When the offensive line played really well was typically when Albert Reese was healthy. And Albert, love him to death, man. Appreciate his loyalty to this program. But, you know, down the stretch, Albert was not 100%. But when Albert was healthy, we played really well. Where we struggled is when we had that revolving door at left tackle. And listen, I'm kind of just shoot you straight here, too. I love all of the praise about Jakeem Shumpert-Perkins. And you know what? He may be in a National Football League someday. Maybe. But he hadn't played a meaningful college snap yet. And so I love all the reports. I love the fact that, you know, he's such a big and physical guy. But I'm ready to see him do it in a game. And we're not going to learn a lot about Louisiana Monroe. But, you know, the best teacher is true experience. You got to get prepared on the practice field, but you truly don't understand how people are going to attack you until you get in the game. And so he may start out as like your third tackle and then ultimately take over. You know, we'll see how that goes. You know, Leb has been really high on him. Lodeholder has been really high on him. But kind of like the deal with the receivers. Until we get out there and get the bullets flying, we don't really know what we got. One thing that has been a consistent refrain from talking to people on and off the record is the interior. DJ Chester, Cannon Boone, LJ Prudhomme. That group has consistently been praised, and I think the praise off the record sometimes is even more important. And what's interesting, too, like talking to people in the building last year, it was like, dude, we just got to get to six. We just got to get to six. We just got to get to six. There's none of those discussions taking place now. I believe, based on my conversations with people in the SEAL complex, that they're expecting to get six or more. That it's not the hope of getting to six, it's the expectation of earning bowl eligibility. And I had a long discussion with a good friend earlier. And we talked a little bit about this sort of stuff. He's like, hey, where do we need to be? And he goes, you know, I've always been of the opinion, you don't move on from a coach that's improving your program. Now, other than the fact that, you know, we went 5-8 last year, right? And again, I'm no moral victories collector. But I don't know that anybody with an objective mind can say we didn't improve in year two under Jeff Levy. The numbers certainly bear that out. You know, the win total certainly bears that out. In addition to that, too, I think the fact that we were ultimately competitive in really just about every game, other than maybe the Georgia game, and, you know, it's Georgia, right? I want that game to be competitive. You know, we've been competitive with them before in not so recent years. But we had the ability to stay in games really into the fourth quarter, you know, with rare exception. That wasn't the case in 24. And now with an increased depth, you know, we should be able to finish some of these games. And how many times do you think about, like, what if we've been able to get one more stop? How many of those games would you have won, right? How many games if we could have gotten one more score? Or we convert one more red zone opportunity from a field goal into a touchdown? Or one more first down to bleed off another, you know, 2 minutes of the clock, right? So it's got to be fixed on both sides. But the reality of it is if we take a similar step this year compared to last year, I think we're going to be pleased with the results. Final one, we'll go over here with Lab, but you can go read the transcription for free at Gene's page. We don't need you to sign up for anything. We don't need your email address. You can just go to the front of the website and click, and it's there. You can also find all this on my socials. But we didn't have, like, Zachary Tillman, Jalen Smith, you know, they were careful with those guys in the spring. And it enabled Fat Clark to get a lot more reps. Now, to a man, I've had a lot of guys on defense. I ask them, who's going to surprise me this year? Fat Clark. Almost every time the first name mentioned is Fat Clark. You talk to people in the building and say, Steve, he has absolutely changed his body in the best way possible. I joke with him this summer when I saw him, and I said, hey, I'm going to start calling you not so Fat Clark. He's Fat Forrester. My apologies for that. But I think we know what Jalen Smith and certainly Zachary Tillman can do. And so I think the silver lining in those guys kind of getting some time to rest and recuperate, I think Fat Clark benefited the most from that. So now, instead of having three, maybe four backers that you can run out there and feel good about, I think the number is closer to five or six. But here's what Levy had to say. I asked him, what are you seeing from that group? Competition. You love that right out of the gate, right? Those guys have to bring it every single day. They know they're fighting their butt off to be the guy. They know we have depth in that room. The competition is the best we've had since we walked in the door. I think we have five guys who can play winning football. We need guys to play clean. I like where that group's at. As long as we get better over the next 9 to 10 days. End of quote. That should excite you. Because this is a very linebacker-friendly scheme. And not only do you have depth, you got talent. You're not going to have to depend on, you know, true freshmen to kind of get out there and go make plays for you, which is where we were 2 years ago, which is why Kai McClendon was having to play major reps for us as a true freshman with 1 year of defensive line play under his belt, right? So now this particular group, and again, I give them some credit. Again, player retention, right? We talked about, you know, Zachary Tillman's a guy that committed to us out of Florence High School, has stayed the whole time. He and his mom both love her to death. True Maroon, Tyler Lockhart, right? We got him, and everybody said, oh, he'll just transfer to Ole Miss in the spring portal. Still here for year two. Jaywin Smith got it, transfers over from Tennessee. Again, back for year two. And so you can kind of run up and down that grouping. And again, it's like the receivers. And again, it puts us in a position we really haven't been in a while. And really back to maybe the Arnett era the first time where we had linebackers that just kind of hung in here with us. You know, Aaron Brule left us, so we were so disappointed about that. But by and large, you know, Buki and Jet and those guys, they were with us. And when you have guys that kind of grow up in the system, have a year of experience in the system, you expect to see a nice jump the next year. And again, just kind of running back through this, I mean, just because I think it's important. All right, so Fat Forrest, guys, this is his first year in the new defense, but third year in the program. Darian Gallette transferred in from Texas, his second year with us. LaKendrick James took a redshirt last year out of JUCO, second year with us. Tyler Lockhart, second year with us. A.J. Rice, redshirted last year, second year with us. Jaywin Smith, second year with us. Zachary, been here the whole time, right? So 4 years. Tyshawn Willis, redshirted last year, second year with us. And then you get a couple transfers, you know, in Gev Holman and James Hurt, but they're, you know, they're special teams guys and you know, depth pieces. And you get Jabri Stewart, another guy too that played a little bit last year, but again, second year with us. And so when you begin to think about what Levy's saying about those guys know they got to bring it every day, that's why. It's because you got a lot of guys in that linebacker room with a ton of snaps under their belt, and competition makes everybody better. I think this linebacker room is going to be the strength of this defense. And when you begin to consider that you got Matt Brock back that understands the language Zach Arnett communicates in, you got Zach Arnett back, a guy that's coach backers and understands how important these guys are in this scheme to fit gaps, I think that's a great thing. Of course, we got to have some push up front to kind of keep offensive guards off the linebackers. And we believe we've got that. You know, we'll see when we get on the field. But I think when you begin to talk about the complementary football, at no point in the Jeff Levy era has the defense been able to hold up their deal as well as they should be able to do this year. All right, time for today's top 10 list, brought to you by closewithblair.com. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R.com. Blair Chandler is my friend, your friend, our collective friend in the mortgage industry. And since we're all friends, you need to have his phone number. 601-500-2344. That's 601-500-2344. The reason you need that number is because you never know when you're going to need some mortgage loan origination help. Blair's a guy that can get things done for you. 25 years of experience in this meat grinder of an industry. Life may throw you a curveball. Maybe it's a job change, a life change, a relationship change, a familial change. Life is full of changes. The only constant in life is change. And so when change occurs in your life, let Blair Chandler do some of the heavy lifting for you. Whether it's your first home, your next home, your retirement home, it's the only name you know. He can construct loans to give you the best chance for approval. If you're not ready, he can help you get ready. If you are ready, he can get you that pre-qualification letter, and you can see your real estate agent just jump into hyperdrive to get you into your new home. Be sure and check him out today at closewithblair.com. All right, by request, Tommy reaches out on social media, messaged me on Facebook and sent a meme about some of this Jaden Daniels stuff, which is so stupid. It's so stupid. hey, LSU, you can't use my name, image, and likeness anymore. And I'm upset because you have put my number back into circulation. And I don't know what agreements or arrangements were made with Brian Kelly, but he's not the coach there anymore. You know, Lane Kiffin, whether you like him or not, is under no obligation to honor a promise made by the previous coaching staff. You know, Lane Kiffin wasn't your coach. Now, LSU was your school, and I get it, you know, but this whole thing about retiring numbers, it's not really, you know, we had Kiefer's number out of circulation for a long time. J.J. Hill's wearing it now. Nick Gibson wore it. You know, that was one of those things, too, that a friend shared earlier, too, like Michael Irvin talks about, you know, if you retire my number, I get my flowers when I die, but I get them every Sunday if somebody's wearing my number, right? That's true. That's true. And there are some players, obviously, that, you know, their honor and glory exceed the normal player. And so when you think of a number, like when you think 15 in football, you think Dak Prescott. You think 15 in baseball, you think Jake Mangum. You think 15 in women's basketball, you think Tierra McCowan. You think 15 in men's basketball, you think Timmy Bowers. They're just some numbers that are associated with certain players. But in no way are any of those players' legacy tarnished by the fact that somebody else is wearing that number. So Tommy says, hey, Steve, seems like a good idea for a top 10 list. So Tommy, here you go. Songs with five in the title that we can no longer play out of respect for Jaden Daniels. And I voted for Jaden for the Heisman, so I'm not a Jaden hater. That guy's a heck of a football player. And he was absolutely deserving of the Heisman Trophy. And he won it. And he should have. And that wasn't a great LSU team. You know, like the Joe Burrow thing, Joe won the national championship. You know, Jaden Daniels didn't have maybe the same talent around him and still found a way to win the Heisman Trophy. But here are 10 songs that we can no longer use based on Jaden Daniels' stupid lawyer's argument. Number 10, it's Alan Jackson and Jimmy Buffett. We don't do a lot of Buffett on the show, but Alan Jackson and Jimmy Buffett have a great song called It's 5 O'Clock Somewhere. We can no longer play that song. Number 9, we're going to get a little thrashy here. It's Megadeth's 5 Magics at number 9. Yeah, we go from Buffett to Megadeth. Where do you make that segue? Right here on the Boneyard. Number 8, a song that was actually covered later by Marilyn Manson. I know some of you are fans, some of you are not. But it's The Doors' 5-1. Kind of a creepy song even in its origins. Number 7, David Bowie's 5 Years. You know, we have to throw that one out too. Even Ziggy Stardust has to be, you know, somewhat impugned by all this stuff. Number 6, one of my favorite modern rock bands, coming in the only modern rock band really on this list, it's Shinedown's 365. And I love that song too, you know, because a lot could happen in a year, you know, and it's like, it's one of those songs too that kind of fits kind of wherever you are in life. Maybe you've lost someone that's passed away, or maybe it's a relationship that's ended. But either way, the song is about loss. It's about, you know, I still couldn't keep you here, right? A lot could happen in a year. And there's some truth in that. Number 5, love this band. Love the fact that they found a way to kind of broker a bit of a peace. You know, with Dom and Vinny's families. And Pantera's back out on the road from time to time. It's 5 Minutes Alone by Pantera at number 5, if we can still have 5. Number 4, I remember when this song was making the rounds. And everybody loved it because it was so catchy, it was so different. And it's Lou Bega, who was a one-hit wonder that will now be a no-hit wonder as we have to erase this from our playlist. It's Mambo number 5. How dare you, Lou? How dare you? Number 3, this goes back to one of the iconic albums in the infancy of rap music. And everybody that was cool had this album. If you don't know this album, you should familiarize yourself with this album, as this particular song has been sampled by several other rappers, including Snoop Dogg. It's Houdini's 5 Minutes of Funk at number 3. The album is called Escape. It's incredible. Friends, that was on there too. Freaks Come Out at Night. I mean, it's just incredible from start to finish. There's not a bad song on that album. Would that come out 84 maybe? I think that's right. Number 2. And as much as you hate it, you got to pull it. You know, you can no longer pour yourself a cup of ambition because Dolly Parton's 9 to 5 no longer playable. So it's coming off the playlist. And if you've never seen that movie, you should. It's wild, man. It is. And so much of it was so silly, right? Which is what made it great. And, you know, they used to smoke in the office and stuff, which was a real thing back in the old days. Like in the 70s, people just smoked in their offices. It was true. We still smoked in our offices, I guess, even in the 90s in some places. That's before everybody got so dadgum sensitive. Thanks, Bin Laden. But number 1, and this is what Tommy sent me on the meme. It's Lunas, I Got 5 on it. And of course, that's a drug reference song. But basically, it's everybody's pitching in to go buy some weed. But what's interesting, too, about that song, and there was a lot of this, you know, back in the day, a lot of sampling before all the copyright laws kind of caught up with how it all works, right? That's the that's kind of the benefit. A lot of you guys, you know this song, but you don't really know. It's not really an original track. Lyrically, it is. So the main melody in this thing is from Club Nouveau's Why You Treat Me So Bad. Like, I used to think, was that a Jody Watley song? No, it wasn't. And I love Jody. Why You Treat Me So Bad, that's the basis of it. And then the band part is pulled from Jungle Boogie from Kool & the Gang. And so, top billing from Audio 2, another rap group you should know if you don't. And that's where a lot of the percussion comes from. And there's some other things just kind of mixed in too. So it's one of those songs that has a ton of sampling to it. And as a result, it becomes a bigger hit. And I think, you know, I'm of the thinking too, when properly credited, that sampling can be a great thing. And of course, we used to sample a lot of stuff too, but we would kind of take it and manipulate it, make it our own. But like the controversy with Ice Ice Baby with Vanilla Ice. There were a lot of people in my generation that didn't know the song Under Pressure from Queen and David Bowie. And so all of a sudden, it's like, hey, that's that, right? And that's kind of how I see this thing here. Like Club Nouveau, like that track was great. We used to love that song. And then all of a sudden, the new generation's kind of turned on to a new track, I Got 5 on it. And then all of a sudden, you begin to kind of do your history and you realize, hey, this was a borrowed sample. And there's so much of that in the rap genre where they take something and just kind of modernize it. And I think it works. Of course, there's copyright law that has to be followed, but I think it's a good thing when properly credited. And one of the things that I've learned too, because again, I still have friends in music, that these days, like people will just kind of take their chances. Like they don't clear the sample. They just kind of go push it out there. And then when the original artist comes back and says, hey, we're going to just take your our royalties out of your streaming, they're like, okay, just take it, right? Because, number one, they're not making much money on the streaming side anyway. But most guys and gals these days are making money from touring and selling merchandise. And so even though they're not making a few bucks on the streaming side of things, they're still able to perform the song and have you guys buy a ticket and come out and buy some merch and just have a good time, right? And so that's kind of the trade-off. People are just like, take it. We're not going to fight it. It's smarter to just kind of clear the samples, to be honest with you. And that's one thing I saw a while back, like Nas. I know some of you guys know who that is. His production crew, but when they first got started, because they were trying to put him in a bad deal, he got a better deal. And they cleared all the samples. Look, they just went ahead and paid everybody off for the samples. And then ultimately, he was able to keep like all the proceeds of the album. And I don't know if you know a lot about modern rap, but Nas is great. Not so modern anymore. Been around for a long time. But a little lesson about the music industry today as you kind of move forward. So, Tommy, thanks for the suggestion. I hope I did you justice here. And, again, I think it's absolutely stupid that people would act this way. My feeling, and, of course, I'm sure somebody will say, hey, Steve, you don't understand. You're right, and I'm never going to understand. People give you a platform to perform, and you then use their platform, and they utilize your talent, and it's kind of a collaborative effort. And then ultimately, you reinvent yourself and become an NFL prospect and ultimately a Heisman winner. You're going to always be remembered by that university and those fans. But especially on the football side, with a 105-man roster, it's tough for everybody to have their own number. And there's a lot of people, as you guys know, that there'll be a defensive five and an offensive five or whatever. And I thought it was interesting. LSU made the young man who's wearing five available to the media and said, hey, I've worn that number since I was 4 years old. It's always been my number. And so there's some ownership on that side of it, too. While he hadn't worn it at LSU, it's a recruiting promise, so you won't have to change your number. And, yeah, of course, you know, the Yankees obviously are part of the problem here. But, you know, you got a ton of numbers you can use there. I think all their single numerals are taken. I think that's right. I think that's correct. But the reality of it is like you can honor a number, but retiring a number in college football is difficult to do. It truly is, just because of the fact that all those numbers are needed. And, again, there are some numbers that will kind of work out of circulation for a while, but then eventually you got to reissue the number. I mean, just like we did with Kiefer McGee. And if there was anybody that deserved to have a number retired, you know, it's like losing a player in the prime of their career, and you take out of circulation for a while out of respect, but eventually you have to move forward. And I remember for years we didn't do it, and the thing that I have always thought is the best way to honor Kiefer is for us to, like, fly a flag at Davis-Wade Stadium. You know, maybe you fly it beneath the SEC banner or whatever. But I've always thought that's a way that we could honor them at the stadium and keep the number in circulation. To me, that makes a lot of sense. You know, I don't know how you guys feel, but I can tell you, and it's been 30 years now that we lost Kiefer McGee. And I remember getting the phone call and how difficult that was. I mean, it was absolutely brutal for us. And just a swimming accident here in town. And, you know, so many people thought there was some kind of foul play, but reality of it is he wasn't a good swimmer, man, and I hate it. And we ran a series of articles about that years ago and interviewed Jackie Sherrill and Nakia Greer, who was Kiefer's roommate, and kind of, you know, shared that for a new generation. But for those of you that are young bucks, you don't know who Kiefer McGee was, I would encourage you to do a little research. I think his highlights are still on YouTube. It seemed like they made the rounds. Seemed like Leadbelly 21 or Uncle Rico, one of those two, within the last year, has posted Kiefer McGee highlights. And you can see what we lost. But the main thing that you find out, too, when you do a little research, is what a great person that he was. That he wasn't just a great ball player. So, again, that gives us the opportunity, you know, again, just kind of speak about Kiefer, but my feeling is that when we lose a player during their career, that we should have a flag or something somewhere to remember them and the tragedy of losing them while they were in the prime of their lives as a Mississippi State football player. If you have a suggestion for the top 10 list like Tommy did, you can reach out and let us know. Best way to do that is to hit up Roy Samanti on X at Dogmatic67. You can find our great list on Spotify, and we are up to date. That same handle, Dogmatic67, Dwgmatic 67, and just be sure to just hit, you know, subscribe. It doesn't cost you anything, and then you'll have some new music from us all the time. We make it easy for you. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. Man, we love Campus Bookmart, and why? Well, they got stuff we want. Matter of fact, they got most of the stuff we want because we're Bulldogs. And when there's Bulldogs in your family or on your guest list, the best way to satisfy them and be the hit of the party is to buy more Mississippi State merchandise. The best selection of Mississippi State merchandise can be found at Campus Bookmart. Stop by and see their smiling faces the next time you're in town. Football season's just around the corner. You need to go ahead and outfit your family with some new merchandise, some new apparel from Campus Bookmart. You know as well as I do, a lot of those T-shirts you wear and polos are a couple years old. They're starting to show some age, and it's a new season. You need some new gear. If you can't make it to town, or perhaps game day is a difficult shopping day for you, visit them on the World Wide Web, and you can support a Starkville institution at campusbookmart.net, courtesy of Al Gore's Internet. And by being a loyal listener to this show, we'll give you a phrase that pays, and that is BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than $75, absolutely incomplete. All right. The first top 25 poll of the year is out, according to the Associated Press. Here are some teams that received votes but did not make top 25. Your Bulldog's not one of them. Some of these are homer votes. We're not going to get any homer votes in the state of Mississippi. It's not going to happen. Those receiving votes will go in decreasing order. Clemson with 112 points. Then there's Florida, which I think that's kind of a homer pick too. Boise State, Arizona, TCU, and then like it's all single digits pretty much after this. Navy gets 10. South Carolina gets 10. That's homer votes. That team won four games last year, guys. If they can get 10 points, we can't get one. Come on now. South Carolina's not a top 25 team. Illinois, Oklahoma State, then Vanderbilt, Pittsburgh, Virginia Tech, Minnesota, who we play in week two, got 5 points. UNLV, Dan Mullen on the board. New Mexico, who won 9 games last year. Georgia Tech, UL Lafayette, James Madison, Auburn with 3, that's a homer pick. Memphis with 2, that's ridiculous. California, Liberty, that's stupid. Western Michigan, give me a break, guys. Tulane, and then Virginia. Here is where we start the top 25, though. Just narrowly beating out Clemson for the 25 spot is Missouri. Missouri. And again, I think, again, their whole season is predicated on the health of Ahmad Hardy. They lost a lot on defense, too. And they were a team last year that had a special season in many respects. But if Hardy is not 100%, and I got some people that have told me that if he gets off to a slow start, that his agent may just shut him down and start preparing for the draft. We'll see. 24. And there's a pretty big gap there between 24 and 25. But the Cardinals of Louisville at 24. Willie Fritz, who was a candidate for the Mississippi State job when we hired Jeff Lebby, got the Cougars playing pretty well. They're 23rd in the preseason poll. Just ahead of them, but it's 8 points, are the Iowa Hawkeys. They're just a very solid top 25, very safe pick. Utah in at 21. Of course, they got Chad Bumpus as their wide receiver coach these days. Shout out to Bump. Number 20, Tennessee. And you kind of get the sense, too, that like the Volunteer fans are kind of like, I don't know, kind of losing faith in Josh Heupel. This could be an interesting year. I don't think Heupel's on the cusp of getting fired. But I think there's a lot of people that have been on the bandwagon that are now on the fence. SMU at 19. Those of you that were around when they got the death penalty, you never thought this was possible. But, of course, they also have been a team that has been in the playoff chase the last 2 years. Made the playoffs and got beat. Penn State in at 18. Yeah, we'll see what happens there. Yeah, we'll see. Washington at 17. And the way the schedule kind of works for Washington, they could be one of those teams that nobody's talking about. They just kind of sneaks their way in. You look at that schedule, and maybe we should. I mean, just for fun, let's take a look at this thing, and you'll kind of see my thinking behind this. And we'll go really quick, because I know many of you are like, you know, Steve, I'm just so acutely aware of what happens with us, because I'm a Bulldog. And so really outside of the SEC, I don't pay attention. The Huskies, it's so interesting. Of course, they're in the Big Ten. But what's interesting about their schedule is the home slate is actually better than you might think. All right, so they're going to open up with Washington State, the rivalry game at home. That's actually a Sunday game. It's going to be on NBC. If you want to watch it, we can. Then you get Utah State. That should be a dub. Eastern Washington, that's a dub. Then they get Minnesota at home. Again, Minnesota, a team that people aren't quite sure how to feel about them. Then you go to SC. Right, there's only two games right now on the road against ranked opponents on the schedule. Then you get Iowa, but that's at home. You got to go to Purdue. That should be a win. You go to Nebraska, should be a win. Then Penn State, the third top 25 team on their schedule, goes to Washington. Then you're at Michigan State. That should be a dub. Then the defending national champions, Indiana Hoosiers, come to Washington. And then you finish up on the road at Oregon. So while the end of the schedule is a little bit daunting, you got to look at this and think there is a realistic chance they could win 9 or 10 games. And again, I don't think anybody's really talking about that. We'll see. Just ahead of them is Michigan. I'm just not a fan. I mean, listen, I think they may be a year away. You know, and we'll see what happens with Blair. I mean, it's just one of those things where, are you ready to call him a bust? You know, Whittingham will have them playing well. But nevertheless, USC is 14, and that's going to be interesting. You know, the Lincoln Riley thing is, it was such a big deal when he left and went there. But I don't think that they would agree that they've gotten maybe what they wanted out of the Lincoln deal. I mean, it was such big news, right? And, then we get involved with all this stuff. And Kyle Whittingham. So I don't know. I'm just not a believer. Right, I think USC is one of those teams that you could look up and they're a top 10 team, or they could be a top 25 poll 6 weeks into the season. BYU in there at 14, that's an interesting pick too. Alabama, the Crimson Tide, comes in at 13. Probably fair considering that they, number one, they're Alabama. They're always going to get the benefit of the doubt, but they also made the playoff last year and had some success. And, of course, Indiana wore them out. So 13 is like one of those safe early teen picks. It's like, hey, they're close enough that if they make a run early, we can push them into the top 10. But they're middle of the pack, so in the event they get off to a slow start, we can drop them, and nobody's going to cry about it. Texas Tech at 12. You know, the Red Raiders here to stay. You know, I guess we'll see. LSU at 11. And I understand kind of the hesitancy here, but I also think that they're giving maybe Lane Kiffin too much credit in year one. Again, I think it could be a cool year for LSU because the schedule is favorable. You got Sam Leavitt, and of course, I think Lane Kiffin will get every drop of potential out of Sam that he possibly can, provided he can stay healthy. But guys, LSU wasn't any good last year. And so that's the Lane Kiffin effect. It's like, hey, this is a team that, you know, barely made a bowl game and then got embarrassed in the bowl game, and we're going to make them just on the cusp of the top 10. I think it's a bit of a risky pick. We'll see. Oklahoma at 10, and I think a lot of that is just based on the fact, number one, you know what the defense is going to look like. You get Mateer back. If you get him healthy, remember he was the front runner for the Heisman when he got hurt. And, of course, Mendoza went on to a special season. So even if Mateer stays healthy, I think Mendoza ultimately wins the thing. But Oklahoma at 10 is interesting. Just ahead of them is Ole Miss at number 9. And I think this is an overranking. I think this is basically let's take the playoff group from last year and let's make sure we get them included in the top 14 or 15. That's how it feels. Trinidad is the straw that stirs that drink. That's no surprise there. But they lost some interesting pieces. But you feel like with Chambliss and Lacey, offensively, they should be in a situation where they can score with just about anybody. I think the real challenge is going to be what happens defensively. Not to mention, I mean, you don't have Charlie Weiss and Lane Kiffin kind of dialing things up anymore. So it'll be interesting, too, as teams begin to get film on Ole Miss, will they be able to adjust offensively? Trinidad's a big erasure, though. When you got some mistakes, he's a good enough athlete. He can make some things happen. A&M at 8, and I think this is a bit high, too. And, again, this is a team that, you know, made some plays last year and got beat by Miami in a game that was a defensive struggle but awfully fun to watch. I just think there's so many questions at the quarterback position. And I get it. I get it. You've got an incumbent starter back, but I'm just not a big fan. Miami at 7. And, this, you know, again, 7, because this is a team last year that played for a national championship. And they drop it all the way to 7? You know, we'll see. Maybe. Indiana, of course, wins a national championship. And they get 8 first-place votes but end up being 6. So what that tells you, too, is with 8 first-place votes, there are a lot of people that have them ranked probably outside of the top 10. And this is kind of where it settled. Just a little bit ahead of Miami, 1440 to 1379. And then behind Texas by 43. And what's interesting, too, of the top 7 teams, Texas didn't get a first-place vote. There were 2 teams in the top 7 that didn't. We'll get to the other one shortly. But Texas, and a lot of people feel like, hey, this team is ready to go because you returned most of your roster and you added some offensive pieces to maybe make that offense a little more explosive. You know, we'll see what happens. Of course, we got to play them. Notre Dame at 4. Will you go join a conference already? Right? They're at 4, and we'll see what happens. I just, you know, they've got a potential Heisman candidate, obviously, at quarterback. They're going to be good. They're also in a situation, too, where I think, you know, from a scheduling standpoint, that they're going to have enough marquee games that they can get some wins and just kind of stay where they want to be. They also had 6 first-place votes. The highest-rated team to not get a first-place vote is the team that's expected to win the Southeastern Conference. It's your Georgia Bulldogs. They narrowly edge out Notre Dame. And, again, I think – looking at the math here, Notre Dame with 6 first-place votes. Georgia didn't get any, but they got 3 more points to Notre Dame, which tells me there's some other people out there that had Notre Dame probably ranked closer to 10th. And then those 6 first-place votes, which I think is ridiculous, kind of was a counterbalance. So Georgia right there at 3. Oregon at 2. And Oregon could be a really fun team. And we talked about them a little bit. You know, in the whole thing, in the schedule for Washington, and that's going to be a huge ball game when it's all said and done. But, you know, looking at this Oregon schedule, because, again, I know you guys don't do a ton of research about the Big Ten. This is a team, obviously, that has benefited tremendously in the NIL era, right? I think all of us would agree, you know, Nike money spends, right? And everybody involved wants to see the Ducks win something amazing. But you got Boise State. That's an interesting non-conference game. You should win that one. But again, hey, that's a team that got votes. Oklahoma State, they're a little bit down right now. But again, that's a Power 4 opponent. Then you got Portland State. Okay, so that's like your non-conference schedule. Then you get USC in LA. That may be the marquee matchup that weekend outside of the Southeastern Conference. Then you got UCLA coming to Oregon, should be a win. Nebraska goes to Oregon. Then you got to go to Illinois. Do you think anybody at Oregon, with their speed, is worried about Illinois? I would say probably not. Then you got Northwestern coming to Oregon. Then marquee matchup, right? Oregon heads to Ohio State, the Horseshoe, November 7th. That's back-to-back with a trip to Michigan. And then they will, Michigan will go there. But it's back-to-back dates against 2 teams that are expected to do really well. And then you get a short week and you travel to East Lansing, Michigan. That could be interesting just because of the fact that you get 1 less day to prepare and you got to make that long trip. And then, of course, you close it out in the game against Washington. But Oregon is a team that many people feel like is capable of winning a national championship. And I'm one of those people, too. Depends on the bracket. But 14 first-place votes, which leaves your number one team is the Ohio State Buckeyes. Probably the most SEC team north of the Mason-Dixon line that we see on a routine basis. They always have elite athletes, especially at the skill position. And because of where they're positioned geographically, that region always churns out great tight ends, great offensive linemen, just how it's always been. And then they get the benefit, too, of having a national profile of being able to go out and recruit some of the top skill position players around the country. And so they've kind of built a good thing there. And, again, number one to open it all up, preseason number one. So that's how it looks right now. And my feeling is, you know, Mississippi State didn't deserve a point. You know, we went 5-8 last year. But some of these teams that did get a point don't deserve one either, right? Some of these other teams receiving votes. And so I feel like, my personal feeling, if we win the first two ball games, if you beat Louisiana Monroe, which you should, and you go on the road and beat Minnesota, kind of a middle-of-the-pack Big Ten team, you got a chance to be getting some votes when you go to South Carolina. You're probably not going to do enough to crack the top 25, but you'll probably be in that category of others receiving votes for the first time in forever, it feels like. But that's how it all kind of looks right now, you know. And so it's fun to be able to talk about this kind of stuff, even though, hey, anybody can make a list, even though it's a collective opinion. It's a list of, you know, a lot of people, you know, casting a vote. And a lot of these people, too, if you've met them, you understand that, you know, it's a difficult job. But this time of year, you get plenty of time to do research. And I've always said that I think the AP poll is probably the least accurate. And what I mean by that is, and listen, the coaches aren't watching games either. But I'm akin to at least believe that the coaches and the people within the football building pay enough attention, right? They don't have a chance to watch a game either. But when you're covering a game, that's pretty much the only game you get to see. You know, you're traveling, you're getting checked in, and then you got your pregame stuff to do, and then you got your postgame stuff to do. And so it's difficult to watch other games. Like for your good friend and host, what I do before we had ESPN On Demand, I would just DVR games and then watch them through the week so we could speak about them here on the show. And, of course, I enjoy college football. And so the problem with that is your votes due pretty early on Sunday. So you don't have the benefit of getting home and then having an opportunity to watch all these games before you have to submit a vote for a release of Monday's poll. So it's just one of those things you kind of take with a grain of salt. And that's the one good thing about us having the playoffs. And there's a multiple things, but that's one of the good things about having a playoff is we have a tournament. And granted, it's based on rankings, but the FBS playoff rankings to me make a lot more sense than the AP and the coaches poll. It's because those people are sitting around watching games. It's part of the mandate. And so it used to be where we had the AP poll was would pick a national champion. We don't do that anymore. That's what led us to the BCS rankings. And then ultimately led us to all this other stuff, right? And so now I think we have a better system in place. Is it perfect? No, but it's probably better than anything that we've had. And can you imagine the AP poll years ago when most games weren't televised? Yeah, how do you rank teams you never see? It's kind of like some people in my industry ranking players they never see play football. You know, you just go throw a ranking on them, right? And there's only so much you can tell by a whole video. But there's only so many kids you can see. But can you imagine back in the old days how much of these polls were just basically guesswork, right? I mean, it's like outside of the number one team, it's all a beauty pageant. And then it's a beauty pageant basically that's just kind of built on, you know, your own research. We didn't have internet back then, so a lot of it was just kind of word of mouth. And so, you know, telegrams, things like that. Communication was just so rudimentary in the infancy of these polls. You just kind of wonder how anybody took them seriously. And it kind of goes back to the thing that we say regularly on the show, anybody can make a list, and that's kind of how that worked out too. That's one of the reasons too. I mean, granted, it's all we had at the time, but there just wasn't a lot of validity in all that stuff, just because there was a lot less information with which to pull votes from. And so now we're kind of in the golden age of information, and every game is pretty much available on demand. And every time you turn around, somebody's got a new clip. Like, as soon as something happens in a game, right? As soon as there's an interception or a big sack or a bad penalty, within like 2 or 3 minutes, somebody has already clipped it and put it out on social media. So you don't just have to hear about it. You get to see it almost immediately. And so, again, it is the golden age of information. And so I think the polling is getting better. But, again, even with that, it's kind of, you know, it's hit or miss a lot with the AP and the coaches poll. But it gives us something else to talk about. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle, bar none, when you're bringing a large group to town, and you should. We've done it. We had a great time. Stayed there for New Year's back in 25. My mom can't wait to do it again, and maybe we'll do it this year. Who knows? Depends on the Bulldog Bowl schedule, right? We're going to speak that into existence. Now, here's the thing. There's a lot of water to pass under the bridge between now and the time that I make my own reservation, so you should kind of consider making yours. Whether it's a ball game weekend or a midweek family or work retreat, the Stark Vegas Clubhouse can accommodate you. Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, and when you do, their Facebook page will auto-populate. And you can see pictures of all the amenities available to you and your guests, the full-service kitchen, the wet bar, the back porch area, the fire pit area, plenty of parking. It's an underrated amenity, because when you're bringing that many people together, you don't think about where everybody's going to park. Well, you don't have to. You can invest that emotional energy into something else, like what are we going to cook tonight? Yeah. So, after you've had a chance to kind of take the tour, check out those booking options. You can book through Airbnb or Vrbo if you want, but if you want to save a few bucks, I can help you. Book through the Evolve website and use promo code BSR10. That's BSR10, the number 10, to get 10% off your stay. You'll be glad you did. It's just 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus, the old renovated Country Club clubhouse out past the Highlands off 182. Super cool place, man. Plenty of peace and quiet out there. And enough room to kind of spread out a little bit, too. So we want you to enjoy yourself. Don't throw a rager out there, but plenty of peace and quiet. And also so conveniently located to campus and all your favorite restaurants and shops around the greater Starkville area. Be sure and check it out today, the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. All right. Let's get you up to date on the Jerron Manning, Malik Sewa situation. We have done our best to kind of keep you abreast of this. We've written multiple articles. We continue to kind of wait for this thing to happen. And as I shared, there's nothing to know yet other than the fact that all the briefs have been filed with the 10th Circuit Appellate Court. So the NCAA appeals Charlotte Sweeney's ruling. Now, the appeal is not going to be heard at this time. What they are asking is for this emergency TRO, basically, to invoke a stay so that all these players are not eligible to play this year. Now, many of you would say, Steve, why not? Why don't they just do that? They just say, hey, it's okay. Well, there's multiple reasons why. The first thing is The roster caps, the squad sizes, have already been established as codified law through the House settlement. So if a team like Mississippi State is already at the 105, you're going to have to move some things around. Now, one of the things that kind of helps Mississippi State, and you hate to look at it this way, but if you're just in roster management or personnel direction, you use every opportunity you have. So Colin Coates has a season-ending injury. He does not count into 105. So that gives you a roster spot to work with. There's also a couple of walk-ons on the team. So if you need that, you hate to do it, but you could, right? The flip side of it is, and this is kind of the crux of the NCAA argument, for the person that may get cut at Mississippi State, perhaps they've been with you through the spring. Perhaps they've been with you through the summer. They've gone through all the off-season conditioning drills. They've gone out there. They've been to practice on time. They've worked hard. And even if they're a back-of-the-roster person, they're going to be aggrieved by this. And kind of the argument from the NCAA is that there's going to be harm to student-athletes no matter how this thing goes. Their position is those that already exhausted their eligibility, those that had accepted jobs or signed pro contracts are kind of new when they graduated, that college sports was over for them. They are not especially aggrieved. And I tend to agree, because for every person that gets to come back, there's another that doesn't get to stay. So you begin to think about all of the other athletes, not just making a roster, but now all of a sudden, I got a new guy in my personnel group that I got to compete against. And so it's not just roster and cap size stuff that matters. It's the competitive disadvantage that you're putting players in. There will be some players that will be displaced. You and I both know this. There will be other schools out there that will just say, hey, listen, you know, we're at the 105, but, hey, we can upgrade our roster here, so we'll go – we'll bring these guys back. And, of course, if the portal ends up being forced open before the first ball game, you may have some guys that even make their way all the way through fall camp. They get cut. And so the real question is, when we talk about fairness, and that's one of the things the Wisney plaintiffs have argued, our motion is about fairness. But it's only about fairness for their clients. And, of course, that's their job. That's their mandate. The NCAA and the courts have to make a decision about what's the greater good. You have an imbalance of harm here, right? And when I think about, hey, would we benefit from having Jerron Manning and Malik Sealy? Absolutely. And I'm hoping that it happens. I am. Because I think we can accommodate this with limited disruption. But there are other programs around the country that's not the case. And there are going to be some very difficult, cutthroat decisions that are made that can negatively impact players that have done everything right. Everybody that signed on in 22 and 23 that year, they were expected to get 5 years to play four. Well, you've exhausted those 4 years of active eligibility. And so I understand that part of the argument. I do. So the Tenth Circuit appellate court can rule at any time. And what's interesting is in Ohio today, there was another NCAA motion to institute a stay involved another big group of players. And the court granted the stay, at least until the appeals court rules. And so that's rather interesting too. And so there's a lot of people out there too that are saying, hey, you know, I'm doing this and we, you know, my situation is not impacted by the case in Colorado. What's interesting about that line of thinking, and I'm no lawyer, is you can't take a cafeteria-style approach to the law. It's like, okay, yes, this ruling, this injunction, granted me a fifth year of eligibility. However, if that is overturned, then I still want my fifth year. And so, again, I don't know what the court's going to rule, but it's interesting that some people are saying, hey, yes, that ruling was good, but if we get an adverse ruling from the appellate court, then that's not good. So the only thing that applies to me is what benefits me, not what restricts me. And that's something that it's awfully intriguing and interesting to me. And again, we'll see how it plays out. Guys, we could have an answer tomorrow. We certainly hope to have an answer at some point this week. I was told over the weekend, we're probably looking at about 3 days. That's typically in these expedited rulings of this matter involving eligibility. They don't like it to linger because the calendar works against the student athlete here. If we're going to grant them the ability to move about the country or whatever, we've got to give them time to do it. And the longer this particular three-person panel takes to make a decision about the stay, then that's longer that this thing drags out and ultimately could eat into practice time, which I think Mississippi State, what they're doing is the smart thing. In the event that Jerron Manning and Malik Sealy are able to play, they will have benefited from being on campus and being part of, you know, football-related functions. In the event that a stay is granted, we're not out anything, and neither are they, other than the fact, you know, the loss of that year of eligibility. But at the end of it, they're not going to be aggrieved by that because of the fact that this is a situation that it was kind of a bonus for them. And so one thing I'll say, too, again, I'm no lawyer, but reading the Wisney plaintiff's brief, and I have access to all of the briefs, very grateful for that access, but there were a lot of problems with the Wisney response, a lot of problems. And one of those that they didn't address, and I think this is something that is important, is they didn't address how the ruling impacts other student athletes. Now, the crux of their function is to focus on their clients, but they argued that all these people won't be aggrieved. And one thing they mentioned is that the NCAA said there was like 6,000 scholarship spots still available. The problem with that is it's untrue. And that was 6,000 scholarships available 2 years ago across all NCAA sports, not just for football or men's basketball or women's basketball. And so when you begin to think about how many member institutions we have and how many sports that we have, yeah, there may be some scholarships out there available, but that doesn't mean that it's in your respective sport. So that is kind of a moot point in the argument. So you're arguing for the general populace when it comes to this impacted class, but there is not a guarantee there's a scholarship for everybody. I mean, that can't be quantified. What's also interesting, and this doesn't make the papers because it doesn't get clicks, because everybody sees the NCAA as a big bad wolf. In the last 12 months, there have been four cases of similarly situated student athletes that have received an injunction, and then when the NCAA has appealed to both the second, fourth, seventh, and ninth circuits, it's been overturned. So there's precedent. And what's interesting, too, reading the NCAA's response, and I did my due diligence, and they're correct, that some of the cases that the Wisney plaintiffs used in their brief to argue against the motion in appellate court for the stay are not applicable to these student athletes. So the cases that they used about eligibility were with players who had remaining eligibility. And so while in their mind the principle may seem to be the same, it's not. It's not the same. And so that is something that I think is interesting. Like if you went and read those briefs, like after you read the Wisney plaintiffs briefs, you'd be like, hey, it makes total sense to me. And there's a lot of it that does, to me too. And then you go read the NCAA's answer, and they're kind of rebuttal to some of the issues that the Wisney plaintiffs raise, and you're like, I don't know how they're going to pass this. I mean, you never know what a court's going to rule or what they're going to find important. They have to decide what is best for everybody affected by the ruling, not just the alleged aggrieved party. Everybody that could be impacted by the ruling has to be considered. What's also interesting is the original ruling from Charlotte Sweeney. There have been multiple issues that had to be clarified by her, and then she said there was another order coming, but it hasn't come yet. And, of course, a lot of people kind of opined that was going to be about the portal. However, her own words and her clarification said that she's not adjoining any other NCAA rules involving amateurism or the portal or anything like that, that the court does not have that power. Other courts seem to think they do. And so there's these little district courts, and there's county courts and state courts, and all that's important. But when you've got federal judges and federal appellate courts involved, there are a lot of people that think, well, these rules don't apply to me. But they do. And so it'll be interesting to see how the whole thing unfolds, because the Wisney plaintiffs argue that there's been no error of law. However, in the NCAA response, they point out in her clarification, I think it's Rule 65. that she did not meet the burden of the rule, that her original ruling did not meet that mandate. And so that's why she had to provide further clarification. And the thinking now is the reason she hasn't issued that follow-up order is because she is waiting for the appeals court to make its own decision. Because the last thing I think she wants to do, and this is just my opinion, is to go issue another order that, again, kind of creates even more issues, only to have the whole thing struck down by the appellate court. And that's the thing, too, when you begin to think about this aspect of it, too. For, let's take, you know, Jerron Manning, Malik Sela. Back on July 1st, they had no idea that this was even possible. They had absolutely no idea that there was a court case making its way through the court system in the state of Colorado that could award them another year of eligibility. And of course, Jerron Manning said as late as December that, hey, I'd love to have another year. I'm hoping that 5 for 5 goes through. Well, it didn't before he finished up his time here at Mississippi State. But now all of a sudden, you've given these two young men and thousands of others around the country hope of another year of college athletics. And now if that's ripped away from them, then the court itself has aggrieved the class that it intended to protect by giving them this situation. Because like Jerron Manning and Malik Sela have uprooted their lives. I don't know what they were doing. I don't know if they were working or I don't know what happened in their lives. But all of a sudden, you've created this urgency. It was like, hey, I got to drop everything and get back to Starkville, Mississippi, because I may get another chance to play college football. And you never know, I may go out there and have a big year and then end up developing a little bit more and have the opportunity to play pro football. Only to have it taken away. And so there are not going to be a lot of things to smile about, no matter how this thing plays out. There are going to be winners. There are going to be losers, no matter how it works out. There is no way that these rulings can stand or be stayed without somebody being incredibly inconvenienced and then having an emotional response to how the courts have played this thing out. And that's one of the problems that we have with so many activist-type judges. They don't consider the greater good. And I don't just mean in sports. This is kind of a microcosm for kind of one of the problems that we have in the court system today. Is that, you know, you could have something on the federal level that the Supreme Court has already ruled on, and then all of a sudden somebody out there will just go do something, kind of be a Bolshevik and just go on their own and do something, and of course it gets overturned by a higher court. But there needs to be a lot more responsible actions when it comes to the judiciary. Because I think the way this has been handled is incorrect. That's just my personal feeling. And again, I'm pulling that Manning and Sela get to play for Mississippi State because they make us a better football team. But is that the right reason? Well, that's the one I'm going with, right? Because at the end of the day, it's like everybody else. It's just like this deal in Pittsburgh, right? You know, everybody, you know, cheers the decision because it makes Ole Miss a better football team, right? This situation here, we don't have an alum judge making the ruling, but the same principle still applies, that we're working this stuff through the court system, and we're not even plaintiffs in this case. Like, I mean, our players are not. But we could benefit from a court ruling that in turn could make us a better football program. And that's what we're all rooting for, right? We're rooting for Mississippi State to win. And if a court case makes it easier for us to win some ball games, then that's what we're going to go down on. But I will tell you, after reading those briefs today, I have a tendency to think that this is probably not going to work out. And partially, my thinking behind that is because of the mistakes that I read, and I'm not even an attorney, the wrong citations and the arguments about there was no error in law, and then that was eventually pointed out in the response. Like, to me, while I disagree, I think the NCAA should have just said, hey, in the beginning, they should have just retroactively made all that possible. That's my feeling for every sport across. Okay, so listen, we had the 2021 guys. We had the global pandemic. This could potentially be a legal issue that sends us to court. Let's just go ahead and address that up front, and we'll just grandfather those players in. Right? And again, you can't relax the caps, but you could have instituted the 5-for-5 January and given everybody a chance. That's, to me, that makes the most sense. They didn't do that. And so, of course, you got a court case. And then, but again, the way this works and the way the clock is working and it's just ticking away, it's a scenario that's very uncomfortable for a lot of people. But the arguments themselves on paper, from my novice point of view, from reading those, and I can read, and I think I've got the ability to comprehend a lot of this, and of course I've got really good lawyers that I can rely on if I misunderstand something, I think the NCAA has a better case. That doesn't mean that the court's going to rule on their behalf, because you just never know what a court's going to do once they consider all of the arguments and the attachments and the evidence presented. You just never know. And, of course, the appeal itself won't happen for months from now. And so in the event that, you know, this, you get this stay executed, well, then everybody's got to hold where they are. And then, of course, the Wisney plaintiffs can appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court and try to get an expedited hearing with them to get the stay lifted. And so it's going to be a legal battle that's going to take some time. And like all of you, I just want to be able to just enjoy college sports. I want college sports to be able to stay out of the courtroom. And that's why we need some form of the PCSA to pass. If you hadn't done so, visit DutyNobleBook.com. You get signed copies of all my sports titles. Of course, that's Flim Flam, Stark Villains, Alpha Dogs, Dog Pile, The Dude, and of course, the personal memoir, When the Bottom Falls. Pretty soon, I'm going to have to remind myself how to write a book. Yeah, got to get to work. Come float. What is a true rest float spot, Stargo? I need to float. I'm overdue for a float, and my bride will tell you as much. I can tell in my sleep cycles, but also, too, just my aches and pains and being middle-aged, right? So if you've got chronic anxiety or pain, we may be able to help you. But even if you don't, if you just want to take a break, I tell people all the time, even in times of rest, we're overstimulated. When you get in there, your mind can be quiet. At least it does for me. So dial 662-268-7601. Speak directly to my beautiful wife, Dana. She can answer any questions you have about floating, and you can schedule right there over the phone. She makes it very, very simple. And then, of course, come join us over at jeanspage.com. We're running 60% off the annual subscription price for the month of June as part of our pre-kickoff special. We'd love to have you come join our merry band of misfits over at jeanspage.com. But until next time, let's all live our lives in a way that we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.